or not so faint, tang of dead fish and seaweed that your dog Charcoal rolled in before bounding, licky and loving, onto your bed. You'll remember how your grandmother told you the story of all the furniture and art she and your grandfather bought for this house, for you and your children and their children, how they thought it would be there forever. But you know now that any object you can carry out of the house could get lost or broken, sold or stolen. What you get to keep is the friendship, and someday more, of that boy whose life unexpectedly collided with yours, who made it a resolution to right a wrong, whatever way he could. The next day, Sean strides into the diner all alone and orders vanilla ice cream with hot fudge sauce. You adjust your crooked name tag, smooth your sweaty hands down your apron, flip back your hair, lift an eyebrow. What? No iced tea? Resolution, he says, leaning forward with his elbows square on the table, fist cupping his chin, as though he's fighting everything that might keep you apart. Take chances. You mean like driving a stick shift when you have no clue how? Among others. Deal, you say. Resolution. Just don't be so afraid. You will take chances. You will find your way. You will lose opportunities. You will find luck. You will lose your heart. He will give you his. That you get to keep.
The Department of Dead Love by Nicola Yoon. Read by Sullivan Jones. The Department of Dead Love looks nothing at all like I expected. For instance, Cupid is not hanging by his entrails out front, bow and quiver lying cracked in a pool of viscous, semi-sweet pink fluids. The building is not a drab and windowless gray monstrosity designed to cow you into submission the moment you enter it, like so many government buildings are. The DODL is not even just one building. It's a campus of them, and they are quite beautiful, actually. The committee of architects who designed the campus believed that aesthetic beauty could stave off despair. They were wrong. Nevertheless, the buildings are exquisite. Unrequited love is the color of lavender tea steeped a little too long and shaped like a cresting wave. Breakups is an orange starburst of a building, like a firecracker just exploding. Bereavement is the most sedate of the buildings, a periwinkle blue lily at dusk. Most people agree that young love is the prettiest of all the buildings. It's the tentative green of a new leaf and shaped like a single blade of grass, separated from the main campus by a wide blue lake and a wooden suspension bridge. It's only intended for anyone 18 or younger. Before the building was commissioned, there was a great debate about whether young people should be excluded from the general populace. After all, they too experienced unrequited love. They agonized through unexplained breakups. They suffered the debilitating loss of death. In the end, it was decided that the intense nature of young love warranted a building all its own. The DODL's beauty is not limited to the buildings. It extends to the employees. Heart workers, as they're called, must have excellent empathy exam scores and complete a long apprenticeship before they're allowed to tend to the broken-hearted public. City workers, though they may be, they are an attractive, generous, and joyous people, always ready with a smile and a hug and a time heals. That's the department's motto, by the way. Time heals. It's inscribed on the facade of each building. It's stamped on all the stationery. It's inscribed in cursive on small golden plaques in each stall of every bathroom on every floor. I would know, as I've been in them all. By now you're asking yourself, what brings this young man here to young love? More specifically, what brings him to the Office of Emotional Recovery located on the very highest floor? Even more specifically still, what brings him to the cubicle of Gabrielle Lee at the relationship autopsy desk? It was a breakup. An abrupt one. An unexplainable one. When relationships end, a negligible percentage of them get to have a do-over. No one knows what the rules for getting one are, but if you are granted one, You get to have your memories reset and do your relationship over. So, that's why I'm here. I'd very much like to do my relationship over. I don't understand. Everything was perfect when she ended it, I say as soon as I enter the cubicle. It's what I've said to every heart worker who's interviewed me so far. It takes a very long time to get referred to relationship autopsy. You have to make it past the other fish in the sea. It's not you, it's him, her. And did you really love him, her anyway, desks. The counselors there are excellent at helping you cope, recover, and move on so that you don't end up here. But I don't want to cope or recover or move on. I want to understand. And then, I want another chance. The heart worker in the cubicle, Apprentice Gabrielle Lee, according to the nameplate, puts down the tablet she's holding and looks up at me. I'm surprised by how young she is. I'd guess she's around my age, 17 or maybe 18. All the heart workers I've met so far in emotional recovery are considerably older. Then I remember that she's an apprentice, the sole apprentice ever to have a position in relationship autopsy. Her empathy exam scores must have been perfect. "Please have a seat," she says. Her face is a polite blank, no everything is going to be all right smile here. I'd heard that autopsy workers weren't quite as cheerful, not quite as indulgent as others. Less ready with a smile and a platitude. I can understand that. It's a tough line of work, sorting through the detritus of dead relationships all day, trying to find the reason for their demise. I sit. Unlike all the other chairs and all the other DODL offices, this chair is straight-backed and hard and uncomfortable. This is not a place to get comfortable in. She picks up the tablet she'd been reading when I walked in and begins. "It says here that Miss Samantha Fuentes broke up with you 10 months ago. Is that correct, Mr. Marks?" "You can call me Thomas." She just waits for me to respond. "That's correct," I mumble, looking down at my hands. Even now, after all this time, thinking about the night we broke up makes my stomach lurch. "And you were together for 5 months, 4 days, and 21 hours. Is that also correct?" Did I imagine the arch tone in her voice? I look up and meet her eyes. They're clear brown and almost too big for her small face. I can't read any emotion in them. "Yes," I say, "that's correct." "So at this point you've been broken up for more than twice the length of the relationship." Was that a question? I'm fairly certain heart workers aren't supposed to judge you. It's in the charter. Of course things might be different for autopsy workers. No one knows much about them. Nevertheless, I'm definitely feeling a little judged. I take a closer look at her. Her skin is pale brown, almost the same shade as mine, but with pinkish undertones. Her hair is short, with soft curls that frame her face. She reminds me of something out of a fairy tale, a pixie or a woodland sprite. If I noticed pretty girls anymore, I think I might think she was pretty. I scan her desk, hoping to find something personal so I can get a handle on her personality, but there's nothing. Not even a bowl of "you'll feel better soon, but for now bury your feelings with candy, candy." Apprentice Lee is not trying to convince me that everything is going to be okay. Maybe she realizes that if you've gotten to the relationship autopsy offices, you already know that. There's something kind about that honesty. "Yes," I say. "It's been over for more time than we were together, and I'm still not over it. I don't think I'll ever be over it." Her face softens, wide eyes meeting mine. I almost expect her to say, "Time heals," and I'm glad when she doesn't. It's not that I need to convince her to perform my autopsy. She's going to do it anyway. But I want her to understand why I need to be here. That way, maybe she'll agree to grant the do-over when the time comes. "Have you ever been on a roller coaster, Apprentice Lee?" She nods. "You know when you get to the top of the first drop, how the car pauses there for a few seconds to build up anticipation and then it starts to plunge and you get that sick, terrified, hollow feeling in your stomach? I mean, in your mind, you might not actually be scared, but your body doesn't care about that. It only knows there's been some mistake and it's falling. That's how I feel all the time now. I need it to stop. I need to know what happened." She doesn't say anything for a few seconds, but presses her hand flat against her chest like she's trying to keep something in. "Thomas," she says, "you can call me Gabby. Come back tomorrow and we'll get started." I've loved Samantha Fuentes my whole life. Well, almost my whole life. My mom says she saw the whole thing happen. I was 6. We just moved to Sapphire City from the Plains. I'd been moping around the new house for a few days, so she took me to our neighborhood playground and insisted that I introduce myself. "Make some new friends, for heaven's sake," she said. Every playground has rulers, and the king and queen of this one took one look at me and decided I was not a good subject. Maybe it was obvious that I wasn't from the big city. Whatever it was, no one would talk to me, let alone play with me. For the next week, every time I went to the playground, all the other kids ignored me. On the 8th day, Samantha broke ranks and sat next to me on the swing. My mom says I gave my heart to Sam in that moment, and that she's been holding on to it ever since. I tell this, our super couple origin story, to Gabby pretty much as soon as I sit down in her cubicle the next day. She leans forward in her chair, rests her face in her chin, and listens closely. "Did you tell her how you felt?" "No, I was 6. I didn't know how I felt. I just knew I wanted to be her best friend. And we were." "When did you realize you wanted to be more than friends?"
"Puberty."
"Did you tell her then?" I laugh.
"No way, are you kidding?"
She frowns and a small dimple forms just between her eyebrows. "I'm not kidding," she says, confused.
"Well, probably you were a good-looking and well-adjusted 13-year-old, but I was not. Pimples the size of mountains. Braces. Oh, and I was awkward. Not just a little bit awkward, a lot bit awkward."
She smiles wide and it transforms her face from pretty to slightly goofy. For a second, I forget she's a heart worker. "But Samantha was 13 too, right? Wasn't she awkward?"
"Nope. She's always been perfect."
The look on her face says I'm hopeless.
"So you suffered from unrequited love for a while?"
"Yep." She picks up her tablet and swipes for a few seconds.
"I don't see a record of you visiting Unrec about it."
"No. I thought it was only a matter of time until she would love me back. I mean, we were so perfect together. And my pimples couldn't last forever."
"Pimples aren't a character flaw," she says.
I study her perfectly clear face.
"Says someone who never had them."
"That's not true."
She says it gently, but I can feel a pained history behind the words. Kids can be cruel to each other, to themselves. She clears her throat and looks back down at her tablet.
"Tell me about your friendship."
Her voice is more official than it was a moment ago. I tell her how we went to elementary and middle and high school together. We had long conversations about nothing. We agreed on books and movies and games and people. So many of our conversations started with,
"Do you remember that time?"
I love having all that history with someone. I remember her first middle school crush. I remember that red and blue and yellow striped skirt that she loved so much that the elastic waist wore out. We were inseparable until high school and high school boys. Sure, I was a high school boy too. But somehow I didn't count. And she had crappy taste. The guys weren't mean,
but they definitely liked themselves more than they liked her.
They never noticed how she stuck her tongue in the gap in her front teeth when she was thinking. Or how she kind of walked like a duck when she was tired. Or how she scratched at her palm when she was uncomfortable and wanted to be anywhere but where she was. I was the one she complained to about them. It drove me crazy. I look up at Gabby. "Why did she date those guys?" I ask. "How come she doesn't know she deserved better?"
"I don't know," she says. "Love is complicated. That's why we have entire departments dedicated to it."
I nod, even though that's not really an answer. "Why did you become a heart worker anyway?" I ask.
"Everyone in my family is one."
"Did you always want to work in relationship autopsy?"
"Actually, unrequited was my first choice, but it turns out my empathy scores were too good,
Also, I'm good at solving mysteries. Like why perfect relationships end? Something like that, she says. It's easy to see why she's the first ever apprentice to work in RA. She has an easy, soothing way about her. How come Unrequited was your first choice? I'd get to tell people all day that they were worthy of being loved and give them hope for the future. It sounded like a nice way to spend a day. Instead, you're stuck here with poor sobs like me. I smile and try to relax into my chair, but it really is the worst chair. You must think I'm ridiculous, I say.
I'm a heart worker.
I don't judge. It's in the charter. I'm pretty sure you were judging me yesterday when you calculated our time together versus our time apart, I say. Admit it. Maybe just a little bit. Her eyes dance as she says it. And for the record, I was neither good-looking nor well-adjusted at 13 years old. Well, you've made up for it since then, I say. Her wide eyes get even wider, and then she blushes, and then she smiles. I was right about her smile before. It's both pretty and goofy. The next day we meet in the autopsy room instead of her cubicle. I take 3 separate elevators to get to the sub basement. It doesn't escape my notice that there's still another floor down. Is that where the do-overs are done? A heart worker wearing white is waiting for me as soon as I step off the elevator. I have an autopsy appointment with Apprentice Lee, I say. I don't try to hide my nervousness. He smiles a soothing smile and checks his tablet for my appointment. Follow me, he says. We walk down a long hallway the color of rain clouds. Here we are, he says as we get to the autopsy room door. He places a gentle hand on my shoulder. Time heals, Mr. Marks. Gabby is waiting just beyond the threshold. Until this moment, I've never actually seen her standing. She's taller than I thought. Almost as tall as I am. She's not wearing black and white, but a muted blue heather suit that looks vaguely like surgical scrubs, except more fitted. It looks good on her. I'd guess that most things look good on her. Welcome to autopsy, Thomas, she says, interrupting my noticing of her. Her voice is deeper than normal, almost spooky. She's teasing me. Being a little bit dramatic, aren't we? I ask her. Gotta have some fun, right? She says, grinning. I look past her to the platform bed sitting in the center of the room. This isn't going to be fun? She doesn't say anything, but her eyes do. Besides the bed, there's no other furniture in the room. The walls are the same gray as the hallway, but more metallic. They almost seem to be pulsing. Gabby closes the door behind me, and the room is so quiet you can hear us both breathing. You should sit, she says. I hop up and sit right in the middle. She presses a button on the frame to adjust the height so we're face to face. So how does this work? I mean, I read the pamphlets and I've done some research, but maybe you could tell me anyway. It comes out all in one sentence. First, you have to relax, she says, and touches my shoulder. I know it's the standard heart worker's soothing gesture, but when Gabby does it, it doesn't feel like part of her job. Her hand is small and too warm, and I could still feel it there even when she takes it away. Does everyone get nervous? I ask. Yep. And everyone asks if everyone gets nervous, too. You're teasing me again, I say. Yep. Is teasing in the charter? I ask. Is it working? It is. I'm less nervous than I was a minute ago. She sits on the stool in front of me. There are 3 stages. Stage 1, I autopsy your relationship history and determine the cause of death. But how will you know when you're only reading me? You'd be surprised. Most times I can tell by reading just one side of the relationship. Usually the reason is buried somewhere in their memories, even if they can't see it. The cause of death is usually there from the beginning, like a dormant virus. I don't think that's the case with me. I'm sure that sounds as defensive as it is. What's stage 2? If stage 1 fails, then I'll have to perform the autopsy on her. With her consent, of course. She'll have to come in. Will you be okay with that? Have you seen her since the breakup?
At school, from a distance.
And she texts. She wants to be friends.
But you don't want that?
She asks.
I shrug. I already have friends.
Well, you're honest, she says. She gets up from the stool, but then sits back down right away. Do you mind if I ask you a question?
Sure, I say.
Her voice drops like we're conspiring. What do you think the difference between wanting to be friends and wanting to be more than friends is? I nod 50 times and lean in. You have no idea how much time I have spent thinking about this. She laughs. I had a feeling you would have thoughts.
Why?
Thomas, no one makes its relationship autopsy without being a deep, some might say obsessive, thinker.
Would you say obsessive? I ask.
She doesn't answer, but her eyes are definitely laughing at me. You really are very judgy for a heart worker. She leans in, face serious.
Shh, don't tell anyone, but we all are.
On lunch breaks, we sit around making fun of you guys.
Wait, is that true?
No, Thomas, of course it isn't. I don't know why, but this has me doubling over with laughter. When I look back up at her, her eyes are bright and her cheeks are a rosy brown. She liked making me laugh.
So,
she prompts when I'm done.
The difference?
I blurt out my theory. Some people you want to get to know, and some people you want to know you. I think that's the difference. For whatever reason, there are people that you want to tell your weird secret thoughts to. You want to show them your pimples and tell them about your braces. You want them to love you because of those things, not in spite of them.
Some people make you want to be known, I say.
Our eyes meet and hold, and the air feels different, like the words have changed it somehow. I want to tell her more of my weird theories of the world.
That's, pretty good,
she says, and then stands quickly. Is she breaking some heart worker protocol by talking to me this intimately? She walks over to the wall on the right and waves her hand in front of it. A hidden drawer slides open. From inside, she retrieves a pair of black gloves and puts them on. The lights in the room fade to near darkness. The gloves glow a pale pink.
Fly back, please, she says.
I do.
What now?
I'm going to open you up. Not with a scalpel, she says, waving the gloves in the air.
I mean I'm going to open your heart, metaphorically.
Will it hurt?
Yes. You'll have to relive the whole relationship, and then you'll have to relive the moment it ended. It's intense for most people.
Something in her voice makes me ask, how is it for you? Does it hurt you too?
No one's ever asked me that before.
It's too dark to see the pain on her face, but I can hear it. She clears her throat.
When I'm doing it, I feel all the things you feel.
I want to ask more about that, but she touches her hands to my chest.
Ready?
She asks.
Ready,
I say.
She's right. It does hurt. It hurts to see all I have lost with Samantha.
I see our first kiss. I was in her room helping her with an essay for history class. She was pouting because she hates writing almost as much as she hates learning about old things. Out loud, I said, I love that pout. I kissed her, and we began. I see my mom's face when I told her.
Only took you 12 years,
she said, laughing. I see the first time we go to school holding hands. It's not official until your classmates see you as a couple. A few people yell that it was about time. I see the first time I go to her house as her boyfriend instead of her best friend. Her dad said we were no longer allowed in her room alone together. I was pissed, but happy too. I spent the afternoon watching the robot games with him. I see the sunshine yellow daffodils I bought her for our 1 month anniversary. Cotton candy pink tulips for our second. Ruby lilies for our third. Gabby moves her hands across my chest and presses down a little harder. She's searching, pulling our history up to the surface. Pressure builds in my chest. My overfull heart wants to burst. 4 months into our relationship, it takes Sam a little longer to text me back. 4.5 months into it, the kisses aren't the same. I mean, they're the same physically, but something's missing. She's missing. I gave her coral daisies for our 5-month anniversary. She said we don't have to mark every single occasion. We break up where we began, on the playground. She's sitting on a swing. It's too big for her, and her feet are touching the ground. Her arms hug the chains. I'm about to ask her what's wrong, but then she scratches at her palms. Why doesn't she want to be here with me? She says, I think we were a mistake. She says, I think we were better as friends. I don't say anything. She scratches at her palms again. For the first time, I wish I didn't know her as well as I do. I say, you don't have to stay here. And she says thanks and leaves. I sit on the swing, and I'm 6 again, and the playground is full of kids who won't talk to me. This time, though, Sam's not coming to rescue me. The lights bloom to life. It's hard to move, like a weight is pressing against my chest, pinning me to the bed. I open my eyes, but Gabby's hands are no longer touching me. She's at the foot of the bed now, and she's crying. It does hurt you, I say, sitting up. Please don't tell. I'm not supposed to cry. I'm sorry, I say, and put my hand on her shoulder the way the heart workers do. You're kind, she says, swiping at her tears. You're only my 6th case. I'll get used to it. Your case was supposed to be an easy one. But it's not? Her eyes fill with tears again. None of them have been easy. People feel so much. Love is so big and it leaves behind a crater, even when it's wrong. At the word wrong, the pressure on my chest increases, and I remember why I'm here. Does she know the cause of death now? Was there something wrong with my relationship with Sam? She must guess what I'm thinking, because she straightens her shoulders and swipes at her tears firmly. She walks over to the paneled wall with its hidden drawers. When she comes back, she's gloveless and holding her tablet. All traces of her tears are gone. I'm sorry, Thomas, but your results are inconclusive. What does that mean? I ask. I wasn't able to determine the cause of death. So now you have to autopsy Sam, right? She frowns her dimple frown, considering. Did you ever think that maybe you've just had this idea of who you guys were supposed to be for so long that... No, I say, cutting her off. I've been down this road with other heart workers. I don't want to guess why we ended. I want to know. Now we autopsy Samantha, right? I say again. She starts to say something, but decides against it. She nods. Yes, if she agrees. Of course. But I think she will agree, if only so I can have closure, and maybe we can be friends again. She says she misses being friends. I guess I do, too. And when will you ask her? She waves the tablet at me. I've already sent the results to heart worker Danica. She's contacting Samantha as we speak. We should know in a few minutes. I really haven't considered what I'll do if she doesn't say yes. I rub my hand across my chest. It still feels like Gabby's hands are on me, searching, examining, pulling. I hop off the bed and stroll around the room, but there's nothing in it to distract me. I pace from one gray wall to the other. Have you ever been in love? I call out. Please stop doing that, she says. Doing what? Pacing. I pace over to her and then stop. Have you ever been in love? I ask again. She cradles the tablet to her chest. No. I've been studying for this my whole life. I'm the very first apprentice ever to be assigned to RA. My parents are very proud. So your only experience with love is living it through broken-hearted people like me? She nods. I ask the question idly, just talk to distract myself, but now I really want to hear her answer. Would you ever want to? I mean, with all the stuff you know about it now, would you even want to fall in love? I'd give anything to fall in love, she says. She meets my eyes, and they don't look clear brown anymore. They're a moonless black.
Really? Even knowing how much it hurts? Even knowing how it ends in most cases?
Thomas, she says, all love ends. Sometimes it's a breakup. Sometimes the other person dies. Her voice is so quiet that I have to move closer to hear her. Do you know why I was crying before? It wasn't because of the pain of your heartbreak. It was because you felt so much in the first place. She takes a deep breath. And anyway, isn't that what you're doing here? Hoping that I'll reset your memories and you can have a do-over so you'll feel that much again? Her tablet dings. She checks the screen and moves away, widening the space between us. Samantha has agreed to the autopsy, she says. We'll do it tomorrow.
Hey, T,
Samantha says as soon as I arrive at Gabby's cubicle. She looks the same as she always has, which surprises me for some reason. Since our breakup, I've seen her, but only from a distance. I don't know why I imagine she'd look different. One of my biggest fears has been that while we're apart, she'll change so much that one day I won't recognize her at all. But no, she looks the same. Hey, I say, or I try to say, but no sound comes out. I clear my throat and try again.
Hey!
I say again, this time too loudly. I feel Gabby's eyes studying me, but when I look at her, she looks down at her tablet. Did you already autopsy? I start to ask her. No, Samantha wanted to wait until you arrived. I didn't expect that. I look back at Samantha. Why?
You're my best friend, T. Who else would I ask?
You don't have to do this, I blurt, shocking all three of us. Why did I say that? I've been waiting for this moment since we broke up.
It's okay, T.
She looks at Gabby.
I want to know, too.
We take the elevator to the sub-sub-sub-basement level and down the long gray hallway in silence. In the autopsy room, Gabby immediately puts on her pink gloves and directs me to stand off to the side. Samantha's nervous. I know because ordinarily she'd be talking and asking lots of questions. At least she's not scratching at her palm. Watching the autopsy is strange. The pink of the gloves reflects off Samantha's dress, washes Gabby's face in a rose light. Her eyes are closed and her face is more open than I've ever seen it. This is what it means to be a heart worker. You have to be open to the world, to be able to absorb the range of human emotions and make sense of them. It is beautiful to watch. A few minutes later, Gabby pulls her hands away from Samantha.
Thomas, can you join us over here, please?
Her voice is soft. I walk toward her, searching her face for signs of pain. Are you okay? I ask. I know it's her job, but I feel guilty anyway.
I am fine, Thomas.
Her face is as blank as the first day I met her. She looks past me and over to Sam.
Are you okay, Samantha?
I turn to see Sam staring at me. Her eyes are shining with tears.
I've forgotten how much fun we had together, she says.
I'm not sure what I expected her to say, but that wasn't it. All at once, the enormity of my selfishness hits me. I know that Sam didn't have to agree to do this, but I didn't have to ask.
It's okay, she says, reading my face. I missed you, T.
Does she mean that she misses our friendship or something else? She slides off the bed and stands next to me. My heart pounds and I rub my hand across my chest. For a moment, it feels like Gabby's hand is still right there, pressed against it, trying to find the love I've lost. Gabby clears her throat and we both turn toward her.
Samantha, I need your consent to disclose the results in front of Thomas.
Sam nods.
I'm afraid your results are still inconclusive. I was not able to determine the cause of death.
Wait, what? I say. But you said...
I know what I said. This is quite rare.
What does it mean?
Sam asks. Gabby looks down to her tablet.
It means that there was nothing wrong with your relationship that caused it to die. You have compatible intellects, temperaments, goals, philosophies, moralities.
You're even aesthetically compatible. Samantha, I could find no evidence of you cheating or falling in love with a third party. You weren't annoyed by Thomas's quirks. In fact, you seemed to love Thomas quite a bit.
Then what happened?
She slips her hand into mine and squeezes. Her hand is small and cool and familiar.
It's not like I wanted to break up with him. One day I just woke up feeling less.
It hurts to hear her say it. What surprises me, though, is that I can tell it hurts her to say it, too.
I wish I had an answer for you both, Gabby says. Think of it this way. Back in the 21st century, when the elderly passed away in their sleep and a cause of death couldn't be determined, the doctors referred to it as dying from natural causes. I think that's what happened to your relationship.
She pauses to take breath.
Sometimes love just ends, she says. Can it be fixed?
Samantha asks.
Maybe, she says.
We go back to her office and Gabby explains the mechanics of the do-over. Samantha and I will have the memory of our relationship erased back to when I first kissed her. Since I initiated the autopsy, I'll have full knowledge, such as it is, of why we broke up. I'll also know the date of the breakup. It will be up to me to prevent it from happening again.
Does this ever work? I ask. The success rate is 9.83%, she says.
That's practically a guarantee, I say, and she smiles. It's the first smile I've seen from her all day. I watch as it spreads across her face.
One last thing. Neither of you will have any memory of this experience.
I lean forward in my chair.
You mean I won't remember the autopsy?
No, I mean you won't remember any of this. The last 10 months of your life will be erased.
It takes me a second to realize what she's saying.
So I won't remember you, I ask.
I try to catch her eye, but she's focused on the space between Samantha and me.
It's just the way memory pruning works. We can't cut from the middle of the tree.
It's okay, T, Sam says. We'll get to do it all again anyway.
I don't say anything. Gabby stands and I understand we're being dismissed.
Obviously, you must both consent before we can proceed. If you do decide to do it, come back tomorrow morning. We'll have you happy again in no time.
I arrive on campus early the next morning. It's an overcast spring day, with the sun not quite committed to the sky yet. A few heart workers greet me as I walk across the suspension bridge toward Young Love.
Time heals, they call out.
I smile and nod, but don't respond. Young Love looks different in the hazy, almost light. The color is deeper, less like new grass.
What did people do before the Department of Dead Love existed? Did they just live with uncertainty, never quite knowing why love ended? What a cruel time that must have been.
I make my way past security and up the glass elevators to the relationship autopsy floor. When I get to Gabby's cubicle, I see an older woman leaning over her shoulder. They're both looking at something on Gabby's tablet.
Hi, I say.
The woman straightens. Her name tag reads H.W. Danica.
Mr. Marks, she says. Come right in. I was just going over some last-minute instructions with Apprentice Lee. Nothing for you to worry about. You are in very capable, very talented hands.
She puts her hand on my shoulder and squeezes. I wonder if I'll miss that greeting now that my time at the DODL is coming to an end.
Hello, Thomas,
Gabby says after Danica leaves. She's using her official voice on me.
Or would you prefer me to call you T?
I sit. No, only Samantha calls me T. Call me Thomas, please. She nods, and even her nod feels official.
Well, you are a few minutes early.
She stands up and sits back down again.
I guess you can just wait here.
Samantha's not coming, I say into the quiet.
But she has to come in order for this to work.
She stops talking.
Oh, no. Thomas, I'm so sorry. After yesterday, I thought for sure she'd agree to the do-over.
She didn't decide against it.
Her dimpled frown comes back. I decided against it. She stands back up.
You did? But why?
Gabby, sit down, please. You're making me nervous. She sits.
But you've wanted this for so long.
I know. And now I don't want it anymore.
But why?
You have perfect empathy exam scores, Apprentice Lee. You can probably guess why, can't you? She shakes her head.
I don't want to forget, I say.
10 months doesn't seem like such a bad trade, so you can have her back.
I don't want to forget you, I say, making myself clear.
She clasps her hand on top of the tablet.
I see,
she says.
Oh, no. Have I made a mistake?
Maybe I'd been imagining a spark, imagining that we could be at the beginning of something.
Thomas?
Gabby?
I've never even been out on a date. I wouldn't know what to do.
Also, you're in love with someone else.
Was. I was in love with someone else.
You're not saying that you're in love with me now. I'll have to refer you to Rebound.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that I don't want to forget you, Gabrielle Lee. I want to know you. I want to be known by you.
You know we might end up right back here.
The heart worker in need of a heart worker, I say.
It could happen.
Or not.
All love ends, she says.
Maybe, I say. But it has to start somewhere.
We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Meet Cute. Stories by Jennifer L. Armentrout, Danielle Clayton, Katie Cotugno, Jocelyn Davies, Huntley Fitzpatrick, Nina LaCour, Emery Lord, Catherine McGee, Cass Morgan, Julie Murphy, Meredith Russo, Sarah Shepard, Nicola Yoon, and E.B. Zaboy. This program was directed by Harry Nangle and Garrett Scott. Executive producers, Juliana Wilson and Nick Martorelli. Text copyright 2018 by Alloy Entertainment, LLC. Production copyright 2018, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.